Okay, well, I suppose we better get going. It's the 15th of something, April 2016. This is the Grouchy Club podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Me, John Fleming, and Kate Copstick.
Oh, yeah, me, sorry. Yeah.
We're in the Mamma Mia Charrette Emporium in London, so there'll be background noise. People are buying African artefacts. Hand brought over by Copstick.
That's me. And,
so ignore the background.
And I'm picking the remnants of a very, very excellent Scotch egg. Out of my teeth. John has just picked up.
I was trying to find out where it came from.
Yeah, I could have done that.
She could have done that. She started already.
Don't repeat everything. It's very annoying.
It was very annoying.
Right. Now there's crumbs all over the place.
All over the place.
Honestly.
This
is not starting well.
Where did it come from?
Don't touch. I shall find out and tell the listener. Just don't. We've got enough crumbs here. It comes from...
How often women are told we don't touch?
Chadwick's Quality Family Butcher. 109 Balham High Road, Gateway to the South. Gary Chadwick.
www.chadwicksbutchers.com.
Good, you managed to say that without making any crumbs, John. How unusual.
It's going to carry on like this. That can go on for months like this. Anyway,
that's what I fear.
This is supposedly a comedy podcast.
Yes.
But it never has been in the past. So why should we?
Why break the habit of a lifetime?
It's a very nice Scotch egg, though. I don't know what's in it. The black bits are particularly nice.
Oh, that's racist.
The Afro-American bits in are particularly nice.
Yeah. Anyway. In a kind of a beige sludge, but a delicious tasting beige sludge.
There we go. So the only thing I can think of to talk about is Lewis Schaefer's zero-star review.
Just always want to talk about Lewis Schaefer.
Who?
I want... To
explain. I want.
You having a go at me, John? He's gone all kind of coy now. He's gone all kind of. No. You don't get back in my good books that way. It's true. There is no I in team. Quiet, please. Sorry, that was me asking for quiet in the shop.
In the Emporium.
The Emporium of
Lovelace. There's no
yes.
I in team.
The Alex Martini's. Comment, which was basically the same comment that everyone made.
On the zero-star review.
On the zero-star review, which was that the last thing anyone should do is give Lewis Schaefer a zero-star review, because that will make him incredibly happy and delighted. And a happy and delighted Lewis Schaefer is not a happy and delighted Lewis Schaefer, as twere. And there was a lot of people commenting on that zero-star review.
Well, a lot of them are Lewis Schaefer, it has to be said.
But that... moves us, not just me, John, us, on...
Is there an I in us?
No, that would be ois.
Well, if there's no I in us, it's you, isn't it?
No, it's us, John, because I'm going to be dragging you along, kicking and screaming with me.
Oh, OK.
You know, to disguise the fact that, it is basically about me.
I'm just strapped to a pedant, aren't I?
Talking of which...
What about Lewis Schaefer?
OK, moving away just for a second. Have you seen...
It's in the stars. Next July, we collide with Mars.
This is...
It's degenerated, isn't it?
No, but it's about to. Violence.
Ah, good.
Unfortunately... I have a pair of very large wallpaper scissors from Puntland with me.
I've already been circumcised, just in case the Jewish diaspora take over.
You know, I'm thinking something much more radical than that, John. I forgot. Oh, thank you very much.
You knuckers in, you know.
I've just been brought a cup of tea. You see, I've completely forgotten what I was going to say now.
Thank God for
You've
that.
Ruined it all. Yeah, that was going to be. It's going to be. Hang on. I'm getting back the train of my thought.
Moving away
back
from Lewis Schaefer.
Douglas got. Yes, pedant.
Oh, God.
You see, you don't get rid of my thought trains as easily as that. Just a very brief sidebar on the pedant front.
Is a pedant someone with feet?
I am currently being... God, I don't even believe in God. And yes, I'm asking for his help now, because it seems to me possibly the only way of getting through this. Talking of pedant, you spoke about pedant. It was your fault, this pedant sidebar. I've been currently extremely exercised, not exorcised, which...
You should be. Yeah.
Thank you. I set him up. By the Gladstone Brooks advert. on telly. It's one of those irritating...
Isn't the one where they say I, is it?
It's the one where they go, which blah, blah, could have been sold to you or I.
I see this. I have an apoplectic fit every time I see this. I mean, my God.
Thank you very much.
The person who's currently... I complain. Yes.
It's just...
This is horrendous.
And man in smart suit, Gladstone Brooks, it's supposedly a posh firm. How can they not know? Does nobody...
But it must have been written by an advertising agency, surely. I mean, they should sack
the exactly.
person. Yes.
Yeah, okay, so Gladstone Brooks, go to your advertising agency, sack everybody involved with that ad, because from the bottom up, they are... idiots.
Well, bottom up, they should be buggered, shouldn't they?
Exactly. Bottom up, they should be buggered. There we are. You heard it first here on the Grouch Club podcast.
Well, I'm glad someone else got annoyed by that.
Oh,
it's on every bloody
I can't bear it, I know.
But on the minority channels I'm forced to watch in the mid-afternoon.
Oh.
Anyway.
What with me and my bad leg? I sit at home, I watch a lot of telly, it has to be said.
You have a bad leg?
I've got a bad everything, John, I think we know that.
I know.
So, that's that. Pedantry, done.
Lou Schaefer.
I'm thinking more... Doug Segal, because...
Isn't Seagull or Segal?
Segal.
Not like, Donathan Livingston.
No, that's Seagal. A child of the 80s.
Yes,
or 70s. Was it 70s?
Probably 60s.
No, it wasn't. No, Neil Diamond. No, it was 7...
It might have been 8. It was a book. Surely 1967, Summer of Love, surely.
No, right, you see, you're thinking of the book. I'm thinking of the concept album.
See, I'm literate. You're just a groupie.
I don't think followers of Neil Diamond could be termed groupies. We're far too intelligent and probably mature for that.
Things have changed so much. He used to be groupies, now it's groupons for Neil Diamond.
That was actually quite smart. You should write that down and reuse it. Put it in a blog. We can protect me. Right, listener, you and I will make a pact here not to say that he said it before. So when you put it in a blog, it will be hilarious and fresh.
I gave up daily blogging at the end of last year because it would give me more time. I've now got less time.
I know.
And I'm now 3 blogs behind.
It's not happening daily, but it's happening.
It's happening occasionally. But
well, I think it's happening more than occasionally, John. Define occasionally.
Every now and then.
This is getting nowhere. Can we go back to Doug Segal?
No, let's go back to Lewis Schaefer. What about Doug Segal?
Well.
Rhymes with cigar.
Segal. Like...
Jonathan Livingston's cigar.
No. Right, we're going in circles now. Yes, so just taking as our jumping off point, for me, Doug Segal. For you, Lewis Schaefer.
He's got a very big beard, isn't he?
Lewis Schaefer?
No, Doug Segal.
Aha, you see, I've got you. I don't know why that was funny, but it's that thing where you go...
It's my timing. It's all about the timing.
Really, yeah. So... Just, there was loads and loads and loads of comments on the zero stars review for Lewis Schaefer. And Doug Segal wrote a thing, I think...
I preferred him when he had black hair.
It was never his own. He wrote a comment on Facebook today, which I think is absolutely, absolutely on the nose.
Lewis Schaefer's hair.
There's been... And I can't remember who the comic was, but it happens again and again that if a comic gets a particularly bad review, then the comic's pals all kind of get together and form one of Facebook's frequent knee-jerk pitchfork mobs to have a go at the reviewer. Now, I am not saying that because of, poor reviewers, don't have a go at us. Of course have a go at us. I'm very, very happy to be had a go at.
So I've heard, yes.
But as Doug, he actually put it very, very well, which is, and I'm quoting him now because I don't think the example could be, not the example, the, well, could be bettered. It says, if someone's going to write a review saying, the low point, it was a dreadful show, absolutely appalling, no stars, the nadir was reached, I'm paraphrasing, when Doug drowned some kittens in a bucket. And then he said, it's perfectly acceptable to go and defend him by saying, you don't know what you're talking about. Doug didn't... There were no kittens in Doug's act. He didn't drown them in a bucket. It's not acceptable to... just to say, you know, you hate Doug, I hate you.
Yeah. And to do him justice, Louis Schaefer came back and said he was sort of shocked that people were attacking him, the critic, because he didn't want people to attack the critic at all.
Didn't notice. Were people attacking that critic?
Well, they were criticising him for criticising Lewis, and Lewis said, Lewis, of course, being Lewis, agreed with the critic.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And it's quite possible, rightly so. He might have been having an off night.
Well, no, in fact, that show, I'd never seen that show fail except to 24-year-old girls in the front row who didn't want to see their father do naughty words and naughty concepts. But this gets us on to critics, but carry on.
You know, it is, I think it's a very good point, and I think it's another part of the kind of shift towards it's like we're getting into a world where nobody can say anything about anyone, not just on stage but now off and as criticism. I think there's always going to be kind of cabals of and it's not so much fans of the comedians who will round on a critic and go, you can't say that, you're rubbish, you're shit, what are your credentials, and go digging around in their past and going, ha-ha, you drowned a kitten in 1986. But it's friends, it's kind of comedy pals of the comic, and that, I think, is dangerous. You do get comedy cabals a lot. People kind of... The group of comics who share a house in North London, it's slightly changed, but there was a group of about six or seven of them, and they kind of went everywhere together in a pack, and nobody could say anything bad about anybody. And a lot of the time, you know, I would see them, say in Edinburgh, sitting around kind of congratulating one another on how brilliant they were. Now, that's not might be very nice, but it's not very useful or creative or... You know, I hate, probably going to get criticised for saying I hate, to think that we're heading for a world where nobody can criticise anything or anybody. As I say, on stage or off, you're not allowed to be, not even nasty, but critical as part of your act. The world is now full of words that you're not allowed to use in case somebody in the audience has a conniption. And now, as a critic, you're not allowed to be negative about comedy. And because, ultimately, all any critic is saying is, I didn't like them. That's the most you can say.
Me personally, on a specific night.
Yes, exactly.
Because yeah. I did about 2 years' worth of Edinburgh Fringe reviews for Chortle, and I didn't much like it, because I don't really like criticising people. You have to be honest in reviews. Mm. So if it's shit, you have to say... There were some good bits in it, but it wasn't altogether successful. And then 5 years later, people start attacking you for that.
I think it, as a critic, it helps to know what the fuck you're talking about, which is where I think some of the babies from the I don't much about comedy, but I can get free tickets.com fall into, because they don't really know anything. Yeah.
I think the Bath Festival reviewer, which is where Lewis got 0 stars, dropped in somewhere. He'd been doing it for like 30 years or something. It's extraordinary.
Well, there we go.
It's the nobody knows anything thing, isn't it? William Goldman.
But you also, we have.
We haven't.
No, I think we have.
No, we haven't.
Well, let's agree to differ. So there we go. I think we have. John thinks we haven't. Moving on.
It was a misty night.
But we've been very nothing but supportive of, well, almost nothing but supportive of Lewis from the get-go. I mean,
Well, we do slag him up, but we love him dearly.
When I when I saw him at first, I gave him 4-star reviews. You have created an entire career from him through your occasional blog, which began to look like his own private, personal, promotional machine.
I feel like Frankenstein, I've created a monster.
But we have to admit that it is... I can easily imagine somebody going along to see Lewis for the first time, not really knowing very much, other than that he looks, you know, he's a smartly dressed guy. You know, if you were to imagine the kind of comedy Lewis did, it would not be what you get. And I can imagine people hating him and thinking, what on earth have I come here from? This is just a self-loathing man, basically, you know, verbally wanking off in front of us. Why doesn't he go and get therapy and leave us alone? I want my money back.
I mean, the review said something like it was sort of vaguely racist, vaguely sexist, vaguely anti-Semitic, vaguely everything.
Yeah, and it is.
And I was talking to Lewis last night, and he said, well, I have to agree with the review.
No, it absolutely is.
With a twinkle in his eye, and postmodernist.
Yeah, but look, well, I don't know. I don't think it is postmodern. It's his own. He is sui generis, because it's not ironic. I don't think anything in it is particularly ironic, but it's his way of approaching it and using these increasingly taboo subjects. And I can, as I say, I can well understand somebody coming to that, you know, fresh. Yeah. And hating it. You have to be allowed to hate it.
And it has to be said, if Lewis sees a taboo, he's just going to leap in.
Of course he is. And you know, as you've said, it's one person seeing the show in one place at one time and making a value judgment on it. That's what it's about, value judgments. And you can say, I don't agree with this critic, or, as Doug pointed out, if the critic has said something which is quite simply factually incorrect, you can say that was factually incorrect. And if the critic got that wrong, he or she was obviously not watching that carefully, you can defend. But I don't understand why you would think that's a good thing to do.
Well, I don't think they'll send people around to break my legs, but I mean, I've never, ever, ever found Reeves and Mortimer funny. Never, ever found them funny. Mm. And that's just my opinion. I've obviously got a blank spot because everyone else thinks they're brilliant. And a very good friend of mine who has the same sense of humour thinks they're hysterical, but I've never, ever, ever found them funny. Oh. Except in the one, they did a sitcom pilot, which was a terrible disaster and never got commissioned. I like that one.
I was the same. I mean, there's a lot of people that I don't kind of get.
But we're not going to name them, otherwise they'll hate us.
No. I mean, I'm not talking about now.
Yeah.
I haven't seen his act for a long, 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 long time. But at the very beginning, when Ross Noble was starting.
Really?
No. at the start, I didn't even understand why. I mean, I remember, I don't know if I actually ever reviewed him, because it's, oddly enough, I had, not qualitatively the same, but at the last Grouchy Club Live, which was huge fun. It was absolutely bloody wonderful. One of our best, I think.
Every month, grouchyclub.co.uk.
First Tuesday of every month. There was a young guy there from a double act called Jolly Boat, who I had been to see at the Fringe last year. Was it last year? I think they were in Opium, one of those places down on Cowgate. It was a great venue, big stage, marvellous. It was packed, it was rammed. There must have been 200 people packed into that room. They generally seem to be of the student variety. And Jolly Boat do kind of funny songs. Jolly. Which I found very meh. I thought they seemed much smarter than the material they were doing. It was very much a one-note samba. It was all very kind of trite, and here's more of the same. And I was the only person in that room not rocking with laughter.
Well, I saw a very successful cult comic who shall not be
named. Name names. No, why not? No, come on, John.
No, no, because it's unfair.
Oh, spit it out.
No, no, at the Pleasance, so about 2 years ago, and it was, again, an absolute packed room, and everybody...
Cult comic, Pleasance, two years ago. If you've got any idea who this is, listener, write in.
Everybody was falling about. As soon as he walked on stage, they were falling about, and I sat through the whole thing stony-faced. No idea what was going on. Yep. I was obviously in some sort of Scientology cult or something. Just no idea. And that's obviously my fault. But I mean, if I were writing a review on that, I don't know how I'd write a review.
Well, exactly. I mean, I did write a review on Jolly Boat. Yeah. And so I wrote what I thought. But I also wrote, because you have to, that I was the only person. Yeah, yeah, and we're not talking about people giving the occasional titter. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about the room rocking with laughter.
Same with me in
for
this
an
act.
Hour.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so this it means, unfortunately, for the act, it's not a very useful review, except that I did make sure they could, you know, pull quote the bits about the room rocking with laughter. It was the same at the start of the 2000s, the noughties, with Ross Noble. And I, because he kind of fairly quickly became huge, and I asked the Scotsman, please don't send me to review him, because what I would write would be, I have no idea why people think this guy's so funny. Basically, if you walk into any decent Newcastle bar, you're going to find a Ross Noble type. He's lovely, he's amiable, but why would you pay 15 quid to go and see somebody just chuntering on a stage and doing kind of train of thought silliness?
But in fact, now...
But he was so popular. So, and then many years later, I met him. Did I interview him? I think I interviewed him. And he's an extraordinary... I mean, he loves comedy in the way that makes you want to read everything and understand everything. And he is so knowledgeable about old comics. I would pay £15 to talk to him, you know, for an hour.
And you
genuinely.
You like the app now, don't you?
And now I can, because of my taste, the kind of person I am, I think.
Have become.
I like, no, this is a remnant of the kind of person I've always been, which is, show me some work.
Oh.
You know, show me the clever, which is not. I know John is screwing up his face, his little eyes have disappeared far back into his head as his beard almost reaches his eyebrows, and that could be a dangerous thing. But I used to be quite appalling. I'm quite appalling in many ways now. But I used to. For me, it was all about the clever, you know, and people, you know, somebody like Ross, who on the face of it was just titting about on stage, you know, and then the more often I started to go and see him, and the more often you see him, you know, you see he'll have written chunks and then he'll drop them in and play around with them, and almost always And it's because it's not the gag quotient, because there aren't really gags as such. It's taking a funny thought for a walk. But the set pieces were the least successful bits in the act, because his whole persona and his his charm is about that... that spark, which is making it up as you go along. And I, you know, I always liked, you know, the Jimmy Carrs and in another... and in a way, I would be happier with something that was so clever it was clever enough to make you love it rather than funny, just funny. I mean, I've changed a lot, and I, somewhere along the line, and I, you know, I suspect being involved with you, please don't start the rumours now, he's Ariane's, being involved with the Hardys and whatnot.
Malcolm Hardy.
The Malcolm Hardys, the increasingly prestigious Malcolm Hardy Awards, has given me a much greater appreciation of the crazies and the Lewises and the people where comics, where you kind of have to, the minute they start speaking, you have to make a sidestep into their world, and then everything kind of makes sense. And if you don't make that sidestep...
But the late Malcolm Hardy used to say, sort of vaguely relevant, late Malcolm Hardy used to say he didn't like jugglers and he didn't like mimes. And it was because if you're a stand-up comic, you couldn't learn it. You had to be, you had to have something in your bones that made you a stand-up comic. Whereas if you're a mime or a juggler, you can spend 8 hours a day for 3 years and almost any person can become a really proficient juggler or mime. But if you spend 8 hours a day for 3 years trying to be a stand-up comic, you won't necessarily become a good stand-up comic because there's a talent. So stand-up comedy is a talent, whereas juggling and mime is a skill. And he differentiated between the two.
But I also think that it's one of the reasons, again, I used to like to know when something was right, if you know what I mean. And you know if a juggler is a good juggler. If a juggler is a bad juggler, he drops his balls.
Malcolm Hardy.
Thank you.
Yes.
If a tightrope walker is a bad tightrope walker, he falls off. If a musician is a bad musician, they'll play out of tune or out of time. There is no, well, that's just the way he does it, you know? No, that's the charm of his act. Yeah. He always plays, you know, half a tone flat. Yeah. No, that's... But comics, especially now, can get away with Blue Murder. You just go, well, no, that's part of my charm, or that's what... And there's always going to be somebody who likes it. And I've heard from so many comics who've played huge rooms, that once you're successful enough to play a huge room, it's almost idiot-proof. I think with some people who play big rooms, it would have to be. But they've said that there's always going to be... All you need is one person in a corner of the room to go... then the person next to them... And it has that kind of knock-on effect. So in a huge room, you're pretty much guaranteed to get laughs. And, you know, with the way television takes and twists any art or craft form, television will take something and go, oh, well, we'll have him, not or her, not because he's funny, but he's new, or she. Just imagine that when I'm saying he or she or they. Or it. New, sexy, hits a couple of demographic buttons. And thereafter, television makes it work. Because, you know, there's laugh tracks, there's everything. And then you're playing the bigger rooms because you're on telly. And then there's a kind of dynamic role that's created, which is twisted by the advent of television, and to a lesser extent, t'internet. Because, you know, if you've got 20 million followers on, what do we call it,
Twitter.
YouTube, then people are going to think, you are someone.
Ariane Shireen, who you previously mentioned, who's sort of starting for the second time in comedy after a 30-year gap, was saying that she...
doesn't look old enough to have had a 30-year gap.
13.
Oh, 13.
Yes, yeah,
sorry, Ariane. Sorry.
You're thinking me in that age, was saying that, in fact, I think it's true, she's never done badly in a paid gig. She'd been going for about 5 weeks, and she'd had about six paid gigs, I think. And she never does badly in a paid gig, but she can do badly in a free gig. And she thinks it's because if the audience doesn't pay, they don't particularly care. If the audience does pay, they sort of expect you to be good, and therefore they're more likely to like you.
interesting because the audience is literally invested in the show.
But also because the audience expects you to be good, and therefore in their eyes you are good. And for
some reason, audiences everywhere, think again.
And for some reason, she actually does perform better in front of a paying audience. I don't quite know why. She always performs well. Give me a quote. Come on, give me a quote. Give me a quote. Ariane Shireen, go on.
Why do you need a quote?
I don't know.
You've just given her.
I mean, who am I?
Ariane Shireen, she always performs well. I'm
not doyen of fringe critics.
No, you're the you're the Brigstock of comedy.
Brigstock? You just made that up for no reason at all.
Oh, Boswell.
Boswell.
Begins with B.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a clever man.
Although Malcolm said you can't learn comedy, obviously it helps if you've done a lot of comedy. Lewis has got better over the years since I've known him, Lewis Schaefer. But also I saw the early days when Jim Tavare was performing as a stand-up, straight stand-up.
And without his double bass.
And he wasn't very good. I mean, I saw him in small clubs, big clubs. It wasn't very good at all. And I think it's this in Malcolm's autobiography. I think he went up the creek, in the tunnel, every week for like about 6 months until he'd last more than about 2 minutes. And he just sort of suffered. And so I saw him do stand-up comedy, not very good. Nice man, not very good comedy. He then got a double bass. And as far as I could see, he did absolutely the same material with the same words and the same timing, and he was funny for reasons I don't understand. With the double bass, exactly the same act. And I don't know why, I think it was confidence or something. Somehow he may have exuded confidence, and therefore you somehow didn't feel the nervousness in the air from his insecurity. I don't know what it was.
I
guarantee it was almost exactly the same act, with double bass funny, without double bass not funny, and he didn't refer to the double bass very much.
I think confidence is a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and
yeah,
I yeah. Okay, here we go. Stand by for nasty letters. But I think that quite often with female comics,
a bit tough on Jim Tavare.
That can be a problem because of there is a way of coming on stage.
Pardon?
yes. There's a way of making your appearance, coming to the mic, grabbing it, which should tell the audience, this is okay, I'm in charge, you're going to laugh.
Well, someone said to me the first 15 seconds that the audience have decided whether you're funny or not, whether they're going to like you or not.
I know he's not popular amongst many, many comics.
Bernard Manning, a fine chap.
Nope, but the first time I saw, and it was his first Edinburgh show, the first time I saw Andrew Lawrence, he used to look much odder than he does now, and he's got that sort of funny voice that sounds like he was, I don't know, something was caught round his neck at birth. But he, and especially because nobody knew him, so the audience was like, oh, my God. And I was busy scribbling in my pad, he's Steerpike out of Gormenghast. And I just thought that was all I was thinking. Oh, my God, this is quick. Somebody make a film, because Steerpike is here. It was like he'd walked out of my head. And people were going, who's this strange little, looks like he'd come from Middle Earth. And he's ginger. And he's got a funny voice. And so he stood there and he said, I think it was virtually the first thing he said. It was something like, it's a well-known fact that, or he said, because he's very new, someone had told him that if a comic, the most important thing is the first, 60 seconds. If a comic can't get his first laugh within the first 60 seconds, he's absolutely dead. And he said that quite slowly, and he speaks quite quietly.
It took 61 seconds to say it.
No, he said, he's absolutely dead. And then he just gave a beat, and then he just looked at his watch. It was beautifully, beautifully done. But I think, that can be quite... You need to establish a bond of trust with the audience that you can make them laugh, unless you're Stuart Lee, and then you have a bond of domination... That where the audience agree to do pretty much anything Stuart wants them to do.
That's your fantasy coming in there. But I can't remember who told me this, but they did say it's the walk from off stage to on stage, and the audience has decided by the time you've reached the microphone even whether they, yeah. you're going to be, whether they're in safe hands.
Yeah, and then, you know, there are just, I don't think of this as technical, but a lot of these, we can make you a comic in 2.5 hours type thing. Look, I'm a field comic. I'm now doing comedy courses. I'll teach you how to be a comic. So you can see, you can tell a lot of the people that have done the comedy courses because they've got the same walk and they've got the same take microphone out, swirl the cord, rest elbow on top of microphone stand. When anything becomes formulaic. And speaking personally, I immediately decide, you know, the air is full of the whoosh of a star dropping off the end of a review. if somebody takes to the mic and goes, you go, walk to the mic, take it. Hi. You having a good time?
And I don't know
not what... relevant. You all having a good time? You all Oh, just...
Or how are you? And they're like the third on the bill.
I mean, yeah.
What?
How are you? Or are you having a good time? Yeah, or all of that nonsense.
Even just hi is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Or hello, anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. Just take the trousers off. That's what they have to do.
And it's, you know, and it slows everything down. Mm-hmm. And it's just so irritating. You say, shut up. And get, well, not shut up, but get on, you know, at least say something to establish that you're a comic and not just somebody who's bimbled onto the stage accidentally and is now trying to be polite by asking us how we are.
You had to get bimble in again.
To get bimble in again. Your Lewis Schaefer is my bimble.
Yeah.
I'll have you bimbling very, very soon. But it's that it's not breaking the ice.
Yeah.
It's not anything.
It's some sort of initial...
It's a nervous tick.
Some sort of initial acceptance from the audience. Of the,
it's a nervous tick, and that immediately says, I'm not in charge here.
Yeah, yeah.
I absolutely... I find it very hard not to turn off and get annoyed. So I would say just...
With some confidence.
With some confidence, just get stuck in. Not hello... Where, you know, where the pleasantries have been done for you by the MC. We know your name. The MC's told us your name. Don't tell us it again. We're not. Well, we might be stupid, but no, you don't need hello. We just take it for granted that we're all fine, but we will get tetchy if you don't get into your act, because that's why we're out there sitting in the dark, paying too much for beer and possibly having shelled out on the door.
So that's the way to start the act. Mm. And obviously at the end you just say, that's the end.
Well, I think one of the other things that's interesting is... Oh, my God, I've ruined it.
You ruined the ending. That was the ending, yeah.
Ah, you see, John had his finger poised over the button and he was going to go, you just say, that's the end, and that would have been the end, and I've ruined it.
It was so neat.
I've ruined it.
I can't do it now, can I?